Hello, hello. This is Kinnack, also known as Landon Winkler, coming to you for Metroplexity Podcast 50. Big 50. Sorry for being a bit late on this one. Life is, of course, always throwing us curveballs. But we've got some good questions, and let's go ahead and dive into those. First off, we've got a batch from CryptoDynamic. Hey, again, hope 2018 is treating you well so far. Definitely started out pretty rough. Let's visit some of the early stuff that happened in 2018, because it's kind of good news, I think, in that I've been doing some contract writing for tabletop RPGs. So those of you who've listened to other podcasts know that I'm pretty big tabletop gamer, as is Liz, and Puyo actually is playing in one of the games I'm running right now. Basically, like, if I have friends in MeetSpace, it's probably because they're in my gaming groups. I've been doing a little bit of work with that, and the fact that there haven't been a ton of updates coming out is only very slightly because of that. It's mostly been winter equals depression equals stuff not getting done. Apologize for the chiming clock, if you can hear that in the background. But we have a sweet grandfather clock that my spouse's dad built, so hard to complain too much. So I've been doing that, and that has actually been, money-wise, working out pretty well, to the extent that we've had a lot of conversations about, like, oh, you know, would like to advertise more, or really, like, at all, but like, the money just doesn't make sense for it. Now the money is pretty much going to be making sense for it, because all of the writing that I'm doing is very much, I mean, sort of on like a contract sort of basis to one degree or another, or like whether I'm getting paid directly or getting royalties or whatever. So it's not like I'm self-publishing where I'd have to go out and advertise that. So if there's going to be advertising, it's going to be for Metroplexity and Twilight Heroes. And it's looking like for the foreseeable future, the money that's coming in from Metroplexity and Twilight Heroes will probably be able to be turned over largely, if not entirely, to advertising, which is very cool. So that's really cool. And as I sort of implied as I was talking about just the general experiences of winter, winter never treats me terribly well, so most of you listening to this have probably been through Metroplexity winters before, and it's sort of like Christmas happens, and it's cool and it's fun, and there's some new puzzles to figure out with the Christmas content, and then like Kinnack just disappears for an unknown length of time until like the sun returns, and like vitamin D levels stabilize, and all is good right with the world. And obviously to the extent that I can control that. I've been, you know, medicating, therapying, and taking vitamin D, etc., etc., etc. But it's still not super great. But I think that all of that said, the monetary part of that is really some good news. So hopefully we can sort of get that cycle starting up. I just need to. Any lack of ads for Metroplexity is now completely on me, because I need to get some, like, get some art together, basically, and, like, verbiage for ads, and probably Facebook at first, but, depending on how, that goes, probably poking, like, AdWords and things like that as well on Google. We will see what the future will bring, because I don't don't have to worry quite as much about, you know, eating and stuff. That opens up some potentially really good places there that I think will be good for the game as a whole. We've got some undiscovered skills that have been around for quite a while, but some of those have previously been noted as not actually being obtainable. As things currently stand, has anything changed with those? Specifically thinking of 13, 65 through 67, 72, and 73. Well, let me open up the game database here. Sorry if my typing is extra loud or maybe just extra dramatic. I'm trying. I discovered that the microphone on the actual laptop works way better than the microphone on the headset that I was using. So I'm just using that, but hopefully you won't be able to, like, my typing won't be deafening and the like. It also means that I can very easily podcast from the couch and I have a kitten on my legs right now. Kitten, of course, in the general declarative sense that all cats are kittens. She's actually, God, I don't know, 16? No, that's not quite right. 13, I think. Around there. So she's actually a pretty old kitten. I'm starting to have old kitten health problems, but you know how it is. All cats are kittens. Let's see. 13. Is probably the same as where I said it before, in that it's very difficult to get to the extent that I'm not sure if you can get it with current capacities, right? Like, the code's there, but it's pretty tricky. 65 to 67 are for a quest that that is not fully implemented yet, as are 72 and 73. So you don't have to worry about those. It's possible that 13 is doable. It's just challenging, like, even once you sort of know what you're looking for, as opposed to some of the other ones that'll be really easy once you figure it out. You just, like, sort of have to hit on the right idea at the right time. That one's sort of like, I don't want to promise that it can actually be achieved right now. It will be achievable, like, by the time the main quest line is done, I'm pretty confident, but it's a bit tricky. Continuing to look. Oh, I'm sorry. Looking into the past, which is your favorite thing to happen in Metroplexity in 2017? This is sort of speaks to the next set of questions a little bit, but I actually really liked the experiment, like the interlocking unearthly items. I think that that's a cool idea and would like to play around with that space a little bit more. And the actual, like, rollout of that being extremely slow over an extremely long period, obviously wasn't great. And I think another attempt would make the content really maybe click together a bit better, just because the design hurdles of that were very, very interesting. As I'm sure I said before, it was originally, I was planning on, like, a 3-coin item that was, like, that by itself would have been more complex than the clipboard, the orbital watch, Wispy Hops pants together, like, substantially more complicated. Like, if it had actually gone out in that form, I probably still would have set it out as like a 3-coin item, but it, like, for the amount of time that would have gone into it, it would have had to be like a 8 or 9-coin item, like, to actually be in line with everything else. And it was like, wow, that was, I mean, there's biting off more than you can chew, and then there's just like straight up like rookie design mistakes. Like, I like the design, it was a cool design, but like, I should know better than that. So anyway, but what it eventually developed into, I think that there are still some sort of unfortunate artifacts of that sort of design, the design life cycle that it went through to get where it was going, in the final product. But like, the solution that we ended up with, I think, is actually something cool to apply to other things. And continuing to look back over 2017, I've been very lax about keeping up with the Unearthly Item Buying Guide, but I can still manage to strangle up a review of the past year's items, though with the combined narrative, there's a bit of overlap with several of them this time around. Dusty Clipboard, I think we might actually have a handle on most of the encounters from this, although there could still be some Easter egg for type results for things like getting past the shelter door. Sheltered Woman, though, we haven't been able to make much progress, even bringing some things to other items like Gerard of River Town, but is there some standalone resolution to this, or does it require chaining different items together? Something like saving the king, then bringing peace between the national and the corpse, and then doing something was the idea that jumped to mind. There is, so between the three items, in addition to there being like, you know, they have like sort of a game structure that plays into each other to some degree, there's also a underlying narrative structure that I'm not sure is entirely apparent, but I think her relation with that narrative arc really sort of informs her fate, I guess we can say. And that's something like the narrative that's going on there may actually show up being clearer eventually as other like main quest chunks come out, because there's more than most of the unearthly items, like there, it sort of has a very canonical sort of place in some of the stuff that's going on in Metroplex, but it's not so, like, it would be possible to jump there now. It will probably get easier to jump there as you get more evidence, but her fate is sort of tangled into all of that. The Orbital Watch, we found a bunch of stuff with this one. Personally found the mini guys from winning the war to be pretty fun. There's still confusion about what variants of Cutting Crossfire there are for having friends, so all about the exact trigger for learning it, but other than that, are we missing anything significant here? No, most of the stuff with that is sort of the mini games and how the stuff from sort of the Whisper Castle Pants kind of plays into the mini games. There is some pretty weird stuff that you can do that I'm not 100% sure people have gotten all of, but definitely like very much the stuff that you can do with like just the Orbital Watch by itself, I think people have gotten down pretty well. Whisper Castle Pants, still a whole bunch of questions here. Yeah, that probably should have been 3 coins by itself. Like, there's a lot going on there. But, like, it needed a little bit more, I guess, I feel like, to probably feel 3 coins to me. And it was already, I mean, I had already been working on, quote, like, the same item for most of the year. Any chance confirmation that there are victory scenarios for the Alchemist or the Beggar? Something involving the alchemist does seem like the likeliest approach for finding out whatever it is that crafts with dragon blood. There should be alchemist victory. There's enough stuff going on there that it's possible that it's broken somehow and people can't get to it. The beggar, I mean, there's quite a bit of stuff that you can do with him, but there's not like a good end, I guess you could say, with the beggar. In fact, we found techniques for the charm shirt, coronation crown, prince's sword, and princely bloom, but not for the cap of fools. Also seems suspicious. Have we just not been cavorting with the fool enough? There are several techniques you can learn from the fool. Several may not be the right word there. I'm pretty sure that there is a cap related one. So, asked, yes. Yes, there is, in fact, a technique that ties in with the hat itself. Also, a minor thing, I was slightly disappointed that I couldn't check my pockets for some expired medication, but of course, requiring the spacious cargo pants to get stuff from this wouldn't be very fair. Yeah, I feel like I either added or should have added a special message. Oh, but yeah, so, I always ask for Crypto to send me sort of a warning when he's doing the roundup for items, so that I can go back through and reacquaint myself and totally did, and I checked it out, reacquainted myself with them, and then there was just like this long gap before I could actually do the podcast. For what it's worth, there will at some point be some potentially long gap where I won't be able to podcast. I should still be able to work on stuff, but we are doing some house remodeling, which will be kicking me out of my normal workspace, which is getting remodeled, and my secondary workspace, which is also getting remodeled, my tertiary workspace is not being remodeled, but the stairs that go up to my tertiary workspace are being remodeled. So it's going to be a fun adventure. We're probably just going to have to stay with some friends for like a month or something. I'm not sure exactly how long it's all going to take.
This me being confused here is not his fault. It's an artifact of me taking too long.
But you might also accidentally get less vague answers and points. So a little column A, a little column B. The bloody coat. This one might just be straightforward. It provides a bit of healing. It's the only shirt with ranged power. Bloody dodge is useful against some enemies, and bloody draw is pretty powerful range techniques under the right circumstances. I think we may not fully understand those circumstances, since the description implies that range plays into it. But other than figuring that out, do we have any more secrets to wring out of it? I just, like, the bloodied coat and the ringing, I think is just a really great, the sort of thing you'd see in, like, one of the really, like, gritty, like, awful Japanese or, like, Korean action movies that are almost horror. Just sort of like wringing the coat out, just like blood going into like a bucket. I don't know. It's a good visual. It just makes me happy. It's pretty straightforward. The bloody coat is there's not a ridiculous amount going on there. There are a couple of like fun little interactions that I'm not sure if people have picked up on.
And sort of some there's a thing I like to do that I've mentioned before, where like if there's something that I've made sort of like a minor theme or something that hasn't been figured out for a while, I like to put in a new thing on there to sort of like, I mean, not like explain it, but just sort of like highlight it and like give everybody another chance to sort of poke at it and see how it works and what to do with it. And that's there's a little bit of that going on there. There's some of the ways that some of its deeper mechanics work relate to other mechanics in the game. So I think that like the surface level stuff for that, I'm pretty sure is all pretty well understood, but some of the deeper stuff might be worth digging into, if not for its own sake, then because it actually reflects interestingly on other parts of the game. Or at least that's the sort of thing that I'd be interested in, so I like to sneak stuff in there so that presumably there are other people who also enjoy digging into that. Got some questions up also from Al. How are things? Pretty good overall. I've been sort of picking myself back up after, you know, winter. I mean, admittedly, like, it's still winter, so I'm not making any, like, promises, per se, but, didn't get a ton done in January, or, I mean, obviously, it's almost the end of February, so February. And was one of those things where I was really trying to get stuff done and it's not working, and like sort of just digging myself just deeper and deeper into that hole of like, I need to do stuff, but stuff isn't happening. Why do I suck so much? But yeah, sort of took just sort of set everything down, took a bit of a break last week, and I'm sort of trying to gear myself back up with more like realistic expectations to get things rolling again, kind of build up some momentum so that, you know, I can, you know, hit the ground running for late winter into spring. We are probably out of snow for the year. So I guess it's coming from Wisconsin, that kind of makes it feel like winter is over. But yeah, just like in general, it was actually like, I mean, this is going to sound really weird with what I was just talking about, but it was actually a very good winter for me, because like it's normally actually way worse than that. And I feel like in the future, I might be able to navigate even the level of energy that I had, which was, I mean, pretty low, to, like, sort of keep getting a little stuff done. And that's not what happened this winter. And it may not be able to happen in the future. I don't know yet, but it's potentially doable. Halloween wrap up. Do we get earlier access to the party setup earlier for more donations for the room? Yes, absolutely. That was the mechanic going on there. The more donations to the room, the earlier the room's opened to do stuff. And basically, they're just, you know, renting the room either just the day of, which I think was unlocked automatically. I forget if that was unlocked automatically or set to be cheaper so that, like, the holiday would happen regardless. But, yeah, the more that got donated there, the longer you had to work on that. And then it just triggered at I mean, sort of where at the rollover, where the length of time left sort of crossed with the amount of money that had been donated, the setup area unlocked. And I think that's been last 2 years. It might have actually even been longer than that. But yeah, that's sort of been a running theme. And this year, I ended up, I feel like, having to make some adjustments, at least to the language, because it wasn't entirely clear what was going on. But that was very much the intent. What was up with Mirror Man at the Halloween party? There were some choices and development that sort of made him much more relevant. So he didn't get his time in the spotlight, but he was still wandering around a little bit. We got mirrored glass and mirrored tile with no real known use. Are they future content or something we missed? That was the mirrored glass in particular was tied into that whole thing. The mirrored tiles less relevant, but yeah, the mirrored glass, which I'm pretty sure is the it didn't sort of get to the stage where that was pulled in. Got a couple of cane weapons from Halloween. Couldn't figure out how to learn a cane strike. Is that possible? Dun dun dun. Yes, it is. It is possible to learn that. It's a little tricky, but I have faith we can figure it out. Christmas wrap-up. When helping out the hipsters, sometimes you build monster snowmen, sometimes you build tiny snowmen. Is there any way to control that? Let's double check. I feel like there is... right. It's it's sort of those encounters are more indicators than something that you need to, like, it's not exactly counting, like, you know, you need X number of tiny snowmen, it's sort of, or, you know, X number of big snowmen. It's kind of letting you know the mix of encounters you're getting. It's letting you know when certain flags go up, so to speak. Other questions. We can see the giant mole on the surface of the construction site if we are etheric, but we don't see the big dig when we are sober. Why is that? And this might just be a lack of imagination on my part, but it's not actually that it's not there. There just isn't a ton that's interesting with it. If you can't hack into it, It's you get just sort of the hacking encounter. In the reality of the game, what's going on is, like, there's a piece of equipment there that if you don't have anything to do with it, you just walk past it. And it's possible that that would work better as, like, a non-combat encounter, where it's like, hey, there's this big piece of equipment. That sure is interesting. Gain 2 perception. Or whatever. Maybe some will, because, I don't know, big digging machines are kind of sweet. Everyone likes earth-moving equipment, right? But yeah, that's sort of the intent there. And if that, like, actually, I guess, if that bothers people enough that it would bother, there's sort of like the question of which is more annoying, it not showing up, or it's showing up but just being a non-combat encounter. I guess it could be like a... I'm talking myself into including a little something. Yeah, let me put this on. Let's go. Okay. So, yeah, it's not that there is a grand mystery with the big dig, though. Flutter's Amulet seems to trigger on specific opponents. Why Dancer but not Drunken Dancer? Why Filthy Bum but not Insane Bum? I can't see a pattern for it. I don't think... I feel like you might be seeing a pattern where there isn't a pattern to some degree. It's... The trigger for it is kind of, I mean, it doesn't go off 100% of the time, right? But the times that it can go off should be relatively obvious. And it should trigger on, like Drunken Dancer, absolutely for sure, for example. It's possible I screwed something up there, but I would be hard pressed to say what. In the Dusty Clipboard, Orbital Watch, Hospital Pants, how much of the remaining undiscovered stuff spans across from 2 or all 3 of those items? I would say fair amount. Like, I would actually say most of the undiscovered stuff involves more than one of the items. It's setting aside like any delving into like the deeper patterns and the mini games and stuff like that. Like that's not the sort of stuff I'm talking about. Like there's gonna be some interesting stuff buried in there. But yeah, as far as, like, macro level, like, you know, items and techniques, new, like, choice encounter branches and stuff like that, that stuff tends to be pretty, some of the weird little connecty bits. How did those items change from your original design of one giant 3-coin item? Well, the giant item was just going to be the pants, basically, and how they're sort of like 3-ish encounter areas. Basically, instead of like which of those you get depending on both which items you have and like what you've done so far that day, it's like you always get the block, right? Like you always get all 3, and you have to sort of get through it. It also had a much, much deeper set of connections between between the areas. So because it was set up such that, like, you had to go through, like, sort of the castle area to get to the war, right? Like, you just could not get to the war otherwise. Your choices in the castle area not only, like, affected the war and things, but sort of made the war, like, so, like, there's a little sort of, like, vignette at the start that sort of lays out what the war is. Not a little vignette, but, like, the first couple of encounters. That was sort of part of the transition instead, if that makes sense. And your choices from the castle sort of decided things like what sides you were on, right? It was sort of carried through from there. And then once, you know, that, once the war got taken care of, so to speak, one way or the other, that led you into a branch of the sort of the final section. And I mean, the branches shared, it wasn't like an actual tree in the either plant or computer science sense, in that, like, there were a lot of shared notes and stuff, right? Like, we weren't, it was quite a bit more content planned than what ended up happening in those three items, sort of like what I was talking about before. Like, if I'd gone through with the original plan, like, the actual reasonable price for that would have been something like 7+ coins. More like 8+ coins. That's just ridiculous. I mean, I'm sure that some of you would have paid it and been very happy paying it, but that's not, I guess, kind of like the model that I want to be on, and it would have taken even longer to get out than the three items would. I've talked about this a little bit before. My ability to get something out is sort of like is not a linear curve based on how, like, how many man hours it seems like it should take. It's definitely, there's sort of like some exponential function in there as well. So going from like the length of time it takes to go take a 1-coin item to a 2-coin item takes, assuming like the 2-coin item is literally twice as complicated as the one, which it isn't, because there's some adjustments that I make for this exact sort of thing. But assuming item A is 1 unit of complexity and item B is 2 units of complexity, it'll take like something more than twice as much, probably more like 2.3 to 2.5, somewhere in there, like sort of spitballing numbers. This isn't something that's obviously like easy to strictly measure, because every item's different, like how gung-ho I get about something affects my productivity a lot, what have you. But if we had gone from, you know, doing, but even going from like 2-coin item, 2-coin item, 2-coin item, so if those are all like each like, you know, 2.5 units of time, so like we've got 7.5 units to take care of all of them. If those were all just like crammed into one, it would take substantially longer than that, like 10 or 12 units, right? So like that would be like, you get like one donation item in the year, and it would be this ridiculous item, which I don't know, maybe people are into, and maybe that's something that we should consider. But there's a certain point where it's just sort of like, oh God, why can't this be done? So it's not necessarily super fun for me either, which is a lot of why it ended up sort of breaking down, because I was, as I said earlier, sort of a rookie mistake. So very like high in the sky sort of design, and like good design, and the sort of design that I think could have been pulled off very well by, like, if there were, like, you know, we have a team in the sense that, like, we are doing all of the art, and, you know, Lips helps out here and there with stuff, but, like, if, you know, it was actually a, like, you know, traditional design team with, like, three or four designers, like, that could have, that might have been something that, that could have happened. But it wasn't realistic for the actual situation. Any big chunks of content that we have yet to find from Old Town Downtown stuff you would like to tease? There's some mostly looking forward with Downtown, because I've got a lot of really sort of deciding what, like I was talking about before, how I work more efficiently breaking things into chunks, sort of chunkifying things, so to speak. There was the next chunk of cellar door was similarly to what I was talking about with, it was actually way smaller than the animation I was talking about, which is than like the huge original design. But that says more about the huge original design being just dumb. Like, sweet, right? It would have been a fun item, but it was also just dumb. But yeah, it was bigger than I could realistically take on at the time I was trying to take it on, which is another sort of, I guess, awkward reality of, like, if I'd been trying to do it in, like, spring, it might have been fine, but because, like, holidays and, you know, awkward depression issues and whatever, just getting even, like, meaningfully started on it wasn't happening, so we're chopping that up into smaller bits, and hopefully we can take care of those one at a time and cut some of the sort of, one of the other things that's kind of nice in cutting into smaller bits is there's a certain point where it's like, cut it up and you're like, oh, like, this is really good, like, this is really good, and then, like, there's this other thing that, like, it's a thing, but like, if I can do, like, these two little things, and then, like, a little thing somewhere else in the game, there's actually a good chance that, like, that something else will be better. So, if you sort of, kind of like, I'm chopped up a fish or whatever, you find that there are some parts that you don't actually really need or even necessarily want. So, it's not actually 100% a bad thing that I have to go back and do that. And that is very likely kind of the case with the item as well. Like, I think that at the end of the day, what we ended up with three items was very, very different than how the one item would have played out. But I think there are parts of it that are a lot, probably more fun. Like, there's a lot more, I guess, player agency in the actual finished design than the original, which is kind of funny, because, like, the original is very much like this deeply, like, nested sort of tree, and like, consequences are obviously a huge part of Metroplexity, so I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, but, like, there's, like, some of that got lost, but in exchange, ended up being a lot more opportunities there, and there were some also some places where, because it wasn't so strictly structured, could take a little more risk. Like, for example, if you had to progress through each of the stages, like the mini games might have been a huge problem. I think the mini games turned out good. If I had screwed one of them up or something, by which I mean not like made it broken, like you can always do bug fixes, but just like if it just didn't end up being fun, that could have really tainted the whole item. Whereas in this case, like if the orbital watch had kind of sunk, like the rest of it could still stand on its own. Whereas with the original design, that wouldn't have been possible. So I think that there's pros and cons. And some questions from Argath. For vague or possibly useful information, how do we use seasonal sparkles in the mirror? So far, it just seems that we can trigger them to show, but not actually do anything. Hints for that. Seasonal sparkles. I'm assuming you're talking about the hand mirror. Let me see about that. Yeah, it's either the hand mirror, where I'm not finding anything like that. Most of the hand mirror stuff is relatively obvious what it gives you, as long as, I mean, there are times where if you reflect, like, a bunch of different stuff and use it all together, like, there's a question of what granted what, and it can sort of blur some. But I guess it's possibly mean the old three-coin standing mirror. But I do not know. I will have to give you vagueness, but rather, but confusion. I apologize for that. We have a lot of late year holidays, but not very much. Well, now, do we need want something? Should there be other things going on? I would like. Having some earlier holidays would be nice in the sense that, like, I'm always kind of wiped out this time of year, and having, like, not even something like Christmas, but, like, something more like New Year's isn't a great example. So, like, very not Halloween, maybe not even Christmas, but, like, if I could flip on, like, Valentine's Day and, like, 12th night or something, I think that would be nice. There's also the vast expanse of summer, which just in the real world doesn't have a lot of holidays. And it would be nice to spice some things up a little bit more then. But yes, I would like to add more holidays in general. Particularly, I need to just be. There's a very different sort of idea between the holidays and Metroplexity and Twilight Heroes, and I think a little bit of a, not necessarily applying the Twilight Heroes model to Metroplexity's existing holidays, but like having some holidays that I can just sort of flip on and call it good, would be nice, right? Like, it would just be a nice way to mark the passing of the seasons, as it were. And then, of course, still have, like, you know, Halloween and Christmas being big productions. We've been getting quieter lately. How are we looking on active players? I honestly, I mean, the last couple of months, I've not really been even tracking that. I don't honestly follow it super closely anyway. Just because it's easy to read things into that in dumb ways. There's when I was tracking it very closely, which I did for a number of years, I tend to, whenever I'm doing like advertising, sort of compare like the thing that I found was that there's, I mean, A, a lot of noise, but B, a lot of seasonal trending that, I mean, both because of, like, you know, people don't necessarily, when it's nice out, people don't necessarily want to be, you know, inside playing on the computer, which is great. I mean, go out, enjoy, like, the wonders of the natural world. But, you know, also, like, some people play a little bit more on, like, summer vacation or on school vacations or, you know, when it's cold out but not during school break or during school break. And it's, like, I'm making it sort of sound like, you know, these all kind of overlap, but it ends up making this very complex layer underneath it where any actual change that you're making can very easily be swallowed, just noise. Noise in general. And unless I have a specific reason to be checking out the data, I don't usually worry about it, just because it becomes sort of like a reading entrails type thing. We're looking at clouds, like you just start to see patterns that aren't actually there. That said, I'm sure that there are very good models that if I had actually paid attention in statistical class, I might know more about. But in general, I would say that we're probably not doing like amazingly or anything, in large part because I haven't done updates in a while, and it's been quite some time since we've been able to do a major. This is Zoe, by the way, the cat that I was mentioning was on my legs earlier. You can hear her growling. She's getting pets, and I want everyone to know how awful that is. But yeah, and there's just sort of a natural drop off. There are not a lot of games that really hold on to people. I mean, like I talk, you know, we've got people who've been here for years and years and years. And that's, it's not normal for games to be able to hold on to people that long, like at all. Like, it should be, like, there shouldn't, by like, you know, traditional metrics, there shouldn't be anyone playing metrics. So the comparison there is a little bit weird. That said, like, do need more frequent updates, do need advertising. Both of those things are looking better now than they have been since, like, sort of the end of the year. So, hopefully those numbers will start to pick up, but I won't have actual, like I said, I've stopped just actually pulling them, except when I need to make sort of comparisons. So when I start doing advertising, it'll be like, okay, you know, how does, you know, spending $20 on Facebook ads, like, you know, how much how many new users does that get us, you know, compared to the last couple of years, like the same span of days, you know? And that can be a little illustrative. But in general, it's just not something that I honestly pay a ton of attention to, which sounds kind of off because it's like, well, don't you want people playing? But it's easy to get caught up in that sort of minutiae without when the actual way to affect it has nothing to do with that minutiae. It's like, I know what I have to do. The question is doing it, not understanding it. So, anyway, long story short, I don't know exactly, but I'm sure that it's not looking nearly as good as it could be. The recent Halloween matches up with things I've run into before, but they're stopping the crypt party is actually more of a punk supporting thing, just playing party supporting thing. I was supposed to be triggering more terrible Halloween things. No. They're so typically for the Halloween stuff, I mean, there's usually several axes going on. And they are all interrelated a bit. So, like, there's sort of a security access, which is opposed to both the punks and Eclipse. There's sort of, like, just, you know, like, decorating things, which is opposed to the punks very seriously. And then the punks and Eclipse have a somewhat adversarial relationship as well. So there's, and how exactly that plays out varies from year to year, and like a lot of times there'll be other factions thrown in and stuff. But the supporting the punks generally, like, if you're just going for anti-Eclipse, like, you know, no Eclipse at any cost, you will end up in a sort of weird spot where you're supporting security and the punks in a sort of unfriendly alliance, right? And making some choices on some encounters that are putting you at odds with people that you're helping in other encounters. And similarly, if you want things to go, like, as awfully as possible, you would end up making some similar difficult choices between sort of the Eclipse and the punks. And if you just want to see the world burn, like, literally burn, like, punks are kind of, are there for you, but, like, if you want to see it burn in, like, etheric amazingness, then you're looking at a different bracket, where you're sort of back and forth between the two a bit. And actually, I mean, if you're wanting to do, like, get some specific result out of it, you might end up doing some decor stuff and Eclipse stuff and maybe even some punk stuff to fight off against the results of the other people that are trying to do other specific things. So there certainly are punk places where it's like punk versus Eclipse or punk versus like specific Eclipse results, but it's not, I would, if it seems like the punks are the only people who are standing against them, that is me not explaining it well or just not giving quite the right mix of options, which, I mean, there's a lot of Halloween stuff every year. That's there mistakes are going to be made. I apologize if it seems like that, but I know in both this year and in years past that there's a lot of security options and some punk options. Not usually so much like the people who can just sort of go along and get along with Eclipse are like people who are building the room. Like, the question with Eclipse isn't whether the room's getting built or not, it's how it's going to be seen. But even in that case, there'll be specific encounters where you'll have the choice where it's like, well, are you gonna, take the supply out to where it goes and, like, help, make the event happen, or are you going to fuck with it? And fucking with it is not helping the event happen, right? Like, so there's very much a cost being incurred there. That you're making a choice between the two. Hopefully something in that mess helped, but I don't think that I guess what I will say is that if you go back through and look at items that nobody has found in Halloweens, probably the biggest common factor is security. That sort of security faction. There's a lot of items that just, sort of like the, you did great, here's your, crowbar or your, cute doll full of Eclipse or whatever. A lot of the security stuff, like, people just either aren't choosing it or are not making it like their priority, or I'm doing a bad job of selling it and people really want to be doing that and I'm just like not, well, selling it, like I said. That's 100% a possibility, but that faction tends to not get a lot of love from, like, the user base, for whatever reason. And so and at times that can play into the choices as well, just because of the nature of Halloween. So, like, this is not specifically talking about last year, but if there's an encounter that's, like, there are security people patrolling, and, like, they're, trying to get, like, some people who are being rowdy and breaking shit out of there. And the choices are, like, fight the security people and, like, make the punks happy and, like, some stuff gets broken. Or fight the punks and make the security people happy. Nothing gets broken, obviously, in that case. Or just, like, walk away, and there's a fight, and presumably some stuff gets broken. Who knows? It depends, obviously, on the encounter. How exactly that plays out, over the people making the choices can really affect, like, in a lot of cases, if you have a bunch of people who are like, fuck the police, right? Which is an understandable reflex, especially considering, like, Midgard's sort of approach to the city, even whether you're running into actual Midgard people or not, like, it engenders that sort of response. But if things go heavily enough one way, like, eventually, like, you'll start to see a change in the encounters that are available. So if, like, all the security people get wiped out and, like, there's no, you know, money to get more security people and, like, nobody's recruiting security people, or they are, but not enough to counterbalance, you know, this general approach, then, yeah, like, there may not be the same number and type of security-related choices available. Because, like, it's like, hey, you know, we've got a spare minute, like, can you help us out, like, patrolling the grounds, which is totally the sort of thing that, like, you'll get in, like, sort of a high security, if in, like, security versus punk teeter-totter, if it goes far enough down on the security side, you'll start getting encounters like that. If, on the other hand, gets far enough down on the punk side, you'll get, like, hey, there are people running rampant, like, do you want to fight them, or just, like, hide, or, like, help them? And then the fight encounter will probably be more difficult, although, obviously, like, they're not really, like, you know, like, hardcore boss encounters or anything, in any case, but a little bit of hard fight versus, like, the effectiveness of them raising hell is larger because the opposition has already gone down, and if you just leave them there, obviously, they'll go ahead and fuck things up. So, like, there's, to a certain extent, like, I mean, like, what choices are available is affected by the choices that people have already made because of Halloween, right? So, in some cases, it might be that the choices that you want to be taking are being precluded because of your or other people's actions. Whatever happened to the Avatar Flames? The Emerald Gift still seems to be hanging on. We don't hear much from them either. It's sort of a... there's... a bit of, like, back and forth in just, like, the themes. So not trying to the Halloweens aren't necessarily, like, a plot line by themselves, so they're sort of little column A, little column B, so they'll be back. The avatars, or the herald, if you prefer, is someone who may certainly show up in other contexts as well. What would you say is the most vital thing to running a game? The canned answer, the answer that you should always give and should always get is make it fun. And that's not, like, super helpful on some level because, yeah, duh, like, you want it to be fun, you want people to enjoy themselves. But there's some nuance there, right? Where that it really needs to be a touchstone of is this fun? How are we making this fun? What kind of fun is this, right? I mean, and identifying what that is and how you're doing it can really deeply impact the design. Design and the running and maintenance and upkeep and stuff. Even if you narrow it down to, like, I want to make a fighting game, right? And you can take a couple fighting games, let's say, like, Street Fighter 2, because I'm old, and Smash Brothers. So Street Fighter 2, particularly with, like, some of the individual remakes, like you'd have to talk to someone who's actually good at fighting games, to know exactly which ones are best. But when you get into like, there's a lot of very technical stuff that's going on there, and a lot of the joy that I feel like people are getting from that is learning the game, really, and like that learning of the game making them better at the game. Whereas with Smash Brothers, I feel like, and there certainly are high level Smash Brothers players who can utterly fucking wreck me, but I feel like there's a very different sort of like minute to minute. I mean, if you think of it as like strategic fun versus tactical fun, I feel like personally, especially as like someone who isn't very good at these games, the like sort of tactical fun in Smash Brothers is much higher. But if I were going to actually like put in the time to get good, I think that there are versions of Street Fighter that would really speak to me. And I'm not going to put in that time. And there are a lot of people who aren't. But you can sort of see there are different types of fun going on there. And if you look into the design decisions that they're making and like how they engage in and even things like balance patches and stuff, you'll see a very different approach between those two games. And that all rises out of what kind of experience they're trying to give people, what kind of fun they're trying to give people. And by keeping their sort of finger on that all the time, they're able to make, in both cases, make a lot of very good decisions for the people playing their game. And that's, I mean, like, do what you're gonna do and do it well and do it right. And obviously, like, do it is a huge part of that. And that's not just like a self-deprecating jab at myself. So, story time. I'm not sure if I've actually talked about this in the podcast before. It's sort of part of the prehistory of Metroplexity. So many years ago, there was a contest that the Magic the Gathering designers put on, called the Great Designer Search. It was basically it wasn't actually a TV show, but it's structured like a reality TV show. It was just like a series of articles, where they had some people jump through their hoops, chose 16 of them, but one jumped out, so 15, and then like had them do a bunch of contests and eliminated the people that weren't doing well, and sort of until they got, you know, someone to hire, basically. And this is kind of newly relevant because they're doing the sort of the third quote season of this Great Design Search 3 is coming up shortly. Anyway, as a participant in the first one, did very well in the sense that I got into the top 15, but very poorly in the sense that I was eliminated immediately after those, and it was kind of a mess, in a variety of senses. But there were a couple of, so, in sort of the style of reality TV shows, right, you have sort of the, you know, this person's terrible, that's why they're leaving the show section when someone gets kicked off. And it's, and one of the things that came up in that, like, in sort of the review of the first public contest, which is when I got away, was that I obviously hadn't playtested my designs, which was 100% correct. Like, they nailed that. Like, that was, there were reasons that that hadn't happened and whatever. But they nailed that, and moreover, they nailed that that means you will be putting out bad designs. So when I say do stuff, I mean not just like, oh, you know, I'm running this game, I haven't been updating as often as I should. Yes, that's all very important, you know. Updating begets energy, begets updating, whatever. That's a very important part of running a game, just actually, like, putting in the time and energy that the game deserves. But before you even get to that point, there is a tremendous amount of design skill that is gained by, not by reading and not even by playing games or anything like that, but by designing, and even more so than that, by getting feedback on your designs. And that is a huge component of being a successful designer and being just like a good designer. Like, even if you're not going to make a dime off of it, you need to find some way to get that feedback. So, I mean, I'm a much better designer now than I was when I started doing Metroplexity for exactly that reason. And that shows through in, I mean, my work on Twilight Heroes and my work on RPG supplements. And obviously I'm working on Metroplexity. Like, there's stuff that went in early that just, I mean, there's a reason that I go back periodically and revamp quests and stuff, because it's like, wow, I did what? Like that? Like, noob. And that's sort of why I was kicking myself with this mistake I made, the big item. It's like, oh, like, I have learned better. Like, that is a thing that me from, you know, 6-10 years ago would have done, that me now should not do. So, anyway. And that all is very important. But just like designing, I guess, people talk a lot about, you know, how to be a better writer. And it's always, read lots of books. Write a lot. But the thing that often gets missed in that conversation, and often because it sucks in a lot of cases, like, it can be a very unpleasant process, and it can be very hard to tell people that they need to do it. Is just get it out there. And sometimes that means, giving stuff away for free, not for exposure, although, like, you know, exposure, like, getting paid in exposure is the fucking worst, is essentially a scam. Like, if you're getting paid for exposure, like, that should be something, a decision that you're making for yourself, not something that's being forced upon you. Anyway. Setting aside shady business practices, and, like, exposure is obviously a good thing, but what you're getting more than that is that feedback, and whether it's, you know, writing and just posting it on your blog or on Tumblr or tweeting it, whatever, that's great. And I mean, game design is very much the same way. And there's sort of the number one piece of advice that designers get is play a lot of games. And that's not wrong. Like, it's a very important thing to do. And something that I am not actually great at. Like, I need to play more games. And the number two thing is just design all the time. Like, the best designers in the world are always designing games. And that's one thing that I... So, like, if I were grading myself on these, it would be, like, you know, like, C on actually playing games. Maybe even lower. Like, I would bet that everyone who's listening to this podcast plays games more than I do. So maybe even D. Not F. Like, I do play some games, but, like, not a lot. But, like, design every day is... Even if I'm not, like, getting anything done, like, I'm always designing games. And that shows through in quality of design later, and, like, you can refine ideas and pick them back up. But the third one that, like I said, is often ignored, is getting designs out there. And whether that's, in a sort of, like, a writer circle type situation, or, like, a mentor apprentice type thing going on, or just, like, you know, posting stuff online, hopefully people, you know, see it and tell you whether it's good or not, what they like or not. That is one that I'm not going to say I actually get, like, an A on. Like, it's more of, like, a B, because I'm actually not great at taking certain types of criticism, which leads me to tell certain types of people to fuck themselves. Which is a good and a bad thing. I guess my advice there is, at some point, you have to decide how much crap you're willing to take from people on the internet, because they will give you that much crap. If you force everyone around you to, you know, I guess, if you don't do anything to sort of police the area around you, you will get all the crap. All the crap. But if you maintain a positive atmosphere, you can get a much better... You can get a much better quality of feedback, but certain types of feedback may not necessarily get to you. And that is a sacrifice I'm personally willing to make, because, I mean, like, setting aside, like, social anxiety and depression, both of which, like, I struggle with a lot, setting those completely aside, like, there are a lot of people on the internet that, like, I just, like, it's not even social anxiety, it's not even depression, like, they're just, a lot of people suck on the internet, and I don't want to deal with their bullshit. So, I don't. And that does mean that I don't get, and this is going to sound really weird, but I don't get the same sort of knee-jerk reactions that a lot of people do, because I've sort of gotten this, you know, very, like, it's like, hey, like, I will totally listen to you, regardless of how, like, out there your complaint might be, but, like, it needs to be, you know, thought through and, like, reasonably polite. And so it sounds dumb, but, like, those knee-jerk reactions do have some value. Like, there is something actually being lost there as a designer. Like, if someone, like, picks up your product and is like, this is trash, and allow me to enumerate, like, the ways. It's not even really that. It's like, psh, this sucks. The thing that you're actually, that I'm missing out by not, like, by not encouraging that sort of atmosphere, or allowing that sort of atmosphere to exist, is not the it sucks, right? Like, there's, but when that is said, can often be kind of illuminating. So, like, if you are working on a game and it can be very helpful to have trackers for, like, okay, so we've got, like, most people will never beat you. Like, regardless of how short your game is, this isn't necessarily true. Like, it's possible to have, like, I would actually be really curious to see, like, a 5-minute computer game, like, the breakdown of how many people actually finish it. But if you're having any game of any meaningful length, most people will never finish it. Myself included, I'm terrible at, like, beating games. But there's a lot to be seen on when they stop. And the type of "psh, this sucks" feedback, not, sometimes they'll actually phrase the feedback in, like, a slightly more useful fashion, like, "this boss fight is bullshit." And it's like, that isn't constructive, but it can actually be a useful data point. And if I had, like, a community manager, which is, like, not even in, like, the top, you know, 5 people that, like, I would go and hire, work for, like, a company, which isn't to say that, like, I don't think they do valuable stuff, just, like, you need to grow at a certain point before you start being like, yes, community manager, we need one of those. When you get there, you definitely need one of them. But, the point that I'm trying to get to is that those knee-jerk reactions are in some ways, like, let you know, like, where shit is whack, right? And, like, you can see my responses to that sort of criticism are a little slow, both because, like, I mean, I don't like it, I don't generally hear most of it, even when it does get passed to me, like, there has to be enough of it to sort of form, like, a statistical curve, so reacting quickly to it can actually be very counterproductive, but, like, you can sort of see that things like the way that the university quest sort of sprung the deaths on people. That arguably was kind of cool. And arguably was bullshit. There were enough darts on the bullshit side that, yeah, okay, like, we can make it clear that people are going to die, maybe give people a second chance, whatever. So yeah, but, like, you need some data for that, and, like, having a constructive atmosphere makes it harder for that kind of data to get to you. In my opinion, totally worth it. If I were going to suggest to someone who was making a game whether they should, like, get that data or have a constructive environment. Like, there's a lot of reasons far beyond getting that data that a constructive environment is incredibly important. But there's that sort of environment means that you don't get a lot of, like, the ill-thought-out emotional reactions, which, like, that's what I'm trying to say is that's actually bad. Like, that, but it's an acceptable casualty, in my opinion. Anyway, hopefully that made sense. And hopefully, like, there are things there, that you were able to pull out, that you think are useful. If there's anything in particular that you want to talk about with that, feel free to shoot me a message in game, or, if it's something that I think needs a really long form, I might put it up on Matchbox the game site. But in any case, I hope that everyone has enjoyed listening. Thank you all for asking questions, and obviously, for playing and for sticking with us while I've been wallowing in the depths of winter. And hopefully you enjoy the stuff that's coming up next week. Working on a donation item and obviously working on downtime stuff. So I will, it might be a while for the next podcast because of the remodeling stuff I was talking about. But I hope you enjoyed Metroplexity Podcast 50. Thanks very much, and I will see you next time.